We're on page 142, the second to the last line from the bottom, the parentheses. Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. Now the Alter Rebbe adds, in the parentheses, an interesting but important detail. Talking about the three stages that the soul goes through. The three stages which we have to discuss, the three dimensions which we have to discuss when we talk about the soul. A, the soul as it is in its own pristine core and essence. B, the soul as it's experienced through the brain. And C, the soul as it's transmitted from the brain to the rest of the body. So the Alter Rebbe now adds, "Va'afilu halev mekabel me'amayach." Even the heart receives from the brain, receives its identity from the brain. Therefore, the brain naturally, innately, dominates and controls the heart, as explained above. What is the Alter Rebbe saying? Yeah.
No.
You're saying that was bothering him. That in chapter 9 he said the animal soul is connected to the heart. And here we see, so the soul is in the heart. And here we see the soul is in the brain. That... concept of heart. It's impulsive rather than reflective. We explained in chapter 9 that what the Alter Rebbe says, the animal soul is in the heart, which apparently would serve as a contradiction to what he says here in chapter 51, that it's everything is in the brain. He says even the divine soul is experienced in the brain only through the animal soul, indicating the animal soul is also in the brain. It's possible that it may be possible to reconcile this contradiction, I'm not sure about this, with what we explained in the classes of chapter 9, that when the Alter Rebbe says that the animal soul is situated in the heart, primarily what he means to say is that its nature and its identity is defined based on the qualities of the heart, which means it's an impulsive soul rather than a reflective soul. Its identity is not based on vision, it's based on impulses, on urges, on cravings. Not on what's right, but rather what do I want? What feels good? Unlike the divine soul, which the identity of the divine soul is based on what is true, what is right, what is real, whether I like it or I dislike it. And this really creates the powerful struggle in our life between what we are disposed to and what we know may be right, between our vision and our impulses, and so forth. But in any case, so apparently there was something bothering the Alter Rebbe, and therefore he says, even the heart, and I know that the heart has its own empire, and I know that the heart really, as we could say, the heart stops, the buck stops at the heart, and the heart has its own melucha. The heart has its own empire, and the heart runs the show. And we know that throughout many generations, very many scientists of the body gave lots of credit to the heart. In fact, they said that the heart runs its own show. The heart is independent. The heart does its own thing. The heart is uncontrollable. And this, perhaps, is indicated in the fact that the heart is responsible for the blood. The heart pumps blood continuously to all parts of the body, including to the brain. I mean, I think it's around 70 times a minute that the heart pumps new volumes of blood to the entire body through the arteries, including to the brain itself. And if the brain lacks circulation that it receives from the heart, the brain can't live. Yeah. Yeah.
Certain solution to keep the heart alive outside of the body.
You're saying the life, the heart could have a life of its own outside of the body. In the sense... Without the brain. Not really. You're saying the cardiac muscle functions on its own. Muscularly it functions on its own. So the Alter Rebbe says, the heart is taka big miyuchas. The heart is taka, has its own empire, but the heart is also a student of the brain. The heart also is a recipient of the brain. It's interesting that Alter Rebbe should write this 200 years ago. When it was perceived by many that the heart is much more... Today, the heart is not viewed as such a distinguished organ. But a few hundred years ago, in many books, you could find the heart being more distinguished than the brain. And some, even the liver is whatever. In any case, the Alter Rebbe says the heart is important, very important. The brain needs the heart. It needs the heart every moment, but the heart is ultimately a student of the brain because everything that the heart does is governed and controlled by the brain, and its entire vitality and function is given to it through the brain. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe adds, he comes back to what is most probably the most or one of the most important doctrines of the whole Tanya, that Betel does say that naturally the mind dominates the heart. The heart, according to the Tanya, however we're going to explain this, based on in Kabbalah you have this, and in Gemara you have this, is extremely connected. It's the seat of human impulses and urges. Now sometimes, and this we don't need a class on, we all know, we learned this in chapter 12 at length, we experience a very intense craving in our heart, and we think during those times that it's impossible for us to control it. And think about it, think in your own life about different very powerful impulses or urges. Some may be very productive and some may be destructive, immoral and unholy. Whether it's in issues of relationships, intimacy, whether it's in issues of eating, sleeping, other habits, everybody in their own life. Think about the strongest impulses you have, the most difficult to overcome. Sometimes a person will tell others or tell himself, I can't control this. The impulse, the craving is so powerful and so intense, this urge is uncontrollable, there's nothing I can do about it. So the Alter Rebbe declared and created the doctrine in Tanya in chapter 12 that it's not true. Moyach shalat al alev. There is not one instance in human life where one can say that his heart owns the brain. It's the other way around. The Alter Rebbe said in chapter 12, the mind is in control of the heart, which means... Even though you may have the strongest of impulses to engage in certain behavior or to refrain from certain behavior, and it may be overwhelming and extremely tense, nonetheless, as he put it in chapter 12, the mind possesses the ability that through the power of reason and conviction, or in Alter Rebbe's words, with the willpower in your mind, with the conviction power in your mind, you can control and abstain from that which your heart craves. And this is the whole secret of the Beinoni. This is the primary piece of weapon of the Beinoni, the Alter Rebbe's hero in Tanya. He's not a person who gets rid of an evil heart. He's not a human being who rids himself from any negative or unhealthy or immoral temptations. The Beinoni may be flooded with the amount of temptations that the greatest Rasha, the most weak or wicked man, is flooded with. Inside the Beinoni can have very, very ugly demons. Despite all of these demons, being in touch with this truth, believing in this truth, that Mayach Shalta Alev, that if you want, if you don't want, the brain will control, the heart will control the mind. If you want, if your mind produces a conviction that I will not do it despite the fact that I want to do it, there's nothing that can hold up a person from controlling any impulse. The Alter Rebbe acknowledges in chapter 17 that sometimes you go too far. I mean, we all know this. If your brain doesn't get in control the first moments and you allow the urge to develop, there is a certain stage where there's no going back. That's true. But you had a choice. At some point in the game, you had a choice to make. In chapter 17, the Alter Rebbe also spoke about addicts, what we can describe today as addicts, who have burnt up their power in the brain. They're brain dead, spiritually speaking, not physically speaking, spiritually speaking. But these are exceptional cases, and usually Me'achshat L'Alev. Now, why is this here? The Alter Rebbe explains it. Because the soul is in the brain. The center of the soul, again, not the essence of the soul, the element of the soul, which is the power plant of the body, is in the brain, and everybody receives everything from the brain. The brain experiences the 613 signals. The brain encompasses every function of the entire body. Not only that, every function is first experienced in the brain, and then it's transmitted to all of the organs, including the heart. And therefore, there's nothing that's not in control of the brain. Now, it seems to me, but I'm not sure about this again, that there is an argument about this between the Alter Rebbe and the Eir HaChayim HaKadosh. You remember? The Eir HaChayim has a fascinating piece, a very long piece, in Parshas Acharei Mois. Perik Yudches, I think, Pasuk Aleph or Pasuk Beis. The Pasuk says, Hashem tells the Jewish people, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am your God, K'maisa Eretz Mitznayim, Asher Yishavtem Balei Sasu. The behavior of Egypt, where you dwelt for so many years, you should not mimic. And he continues, K'maisa Eretz Knan, the behavior that will take place in the land of Canaan, where you will arrive, you should also not mimic. So the Eir HaChayim wants to know, why does it say here, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am your God, as an introduction to this mitzvah? The Jews already know that they have a God. So the Eir HaChayim says that Egypt and Canaan in those times was defined by immoral behavior and issues of relationships. And the Eir HaChayim says, we know that those issues really contain the most powerful impulses and urges in human life. There is no craving that is as intense and no enjoyment that is as profound as the enjoyment of physical relationships. And the Eir HaChayim says, therefore, naturally, it's impossible to control it with your mind. And he says that there's a special divine power that is supernatural, that despite the fact that you see what you see, and the sight of a certain image produces a thought in your mind and an instinct, and that produces an emotion and an urge, despite the fact, he says, the Jewish people were given, because Ani Hashem Elokeichem, because I am your God and I'm not defined by nature, they were given a power that their ratzon should control their chefetz. He says that the ratzon in their mind, the willpower, which the Alter Rebbe also uses in chapter 12, your reason produces a conviction, a will in the mind, should control the craving in the heart. And he says, this is the meaning of tzaddikim, libam berishusam. Their heart is in their own domain. That their mind can control it. But he says, rishayim, hei misurim biyad libam. Rishayim, they are captured, they're hostage by their heart, that if they have a craving in their heart, their ratzon can't prevent it. Their conviction in their mind can't do anything to it. He says it could be for two reasons. Ulai ki ein lehem neshama, either they don't have that soul in the mind which is responsible for this power, or they blemished it so much that it lost its dominating sovereignty. And therefore he says, the Jewish people, Hashem says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, that through a divine power you can be victorious over the natural physical structure of a human being where the heart is in control. Hatsura tishlat b'chaymer, when you agree to connect with Hashem who controls nature. That's what the Eir HaChayim says. Which means the ability for self-control is not simple, the Eir HaChayim says. Not only it's not simple, in cases of relationships it's supernatural. The Alter Rebbe says here, b'toil dosoi. Mayach Shalta Alev is a natural phenomenon, and he says it in chapter 12 even more particularly, even more emphatically. The word, the term he uses in chapter 12 is Shekach noitzera adam betildasi. The person was created that way. And he says, ha adam, the human being. I'm saying he says ha adam, because if you remember in chapter 30, he also says, vavishvar ruach b'fnei kol ha adam, even though the Mishnah says adam. So I shared with you what the Rebbe once explained, that he's saying that it includes a non-Jew as well. The Gemara says in Yevamos, Adam refers to Jews. Tosfos says, Ha-Adam refers to non-Jews as well. I'm just saying, I'm saying this on my own, that it's interesting in chapter 12, he says, Ha-Adam. Every person was created in a way that through the power of will in his brain, he could control every single craving. What does it mean, control it? Not obliterate it. Not nullify it. Contain it. That despite the fact that you want it, it shouldn't take over your behavior. You don't have to do it. You don't have to actualize it in your behavior, in your speech, or in your active conscious thoughts. Instinctive thoughts you're not in control of. Conscious thoughts you're in control of. Why is it so important for the Alter Rebbe to say that it's natural? Because I think this is essential to the doctrine of the Tanya. The doctrine, one of the most important doctrines of the Tanya is that a human being essentially is a moral creature. A person essentially is not an immoral creature and not a neutral creature. A person is a moral creature. You have a soul that is a moral, it's a divine, it's a holy creature. And Alter Rebbe wants to bring out, Alter Rebbe wants to bring out in Tanya, that despite all, Alter Rebbe's hero is not the tzaddik, Alter Rebbe's hero is the beinoni. Which means his hero is the person who has demons and has ugly cravings, and despite them, despite of these cravings, he's in control of them. And Alter Rebbe says it's karev elecha, it's very accessible to every person. So it seems to me that inherent to that is the Alter Rebbe's doctrine that self-control is a natural phenomenon. In other words, every person in their own nature has the ability, and why? He explains it in chapter 51. It's not a supernatural phenomenon. Obviously, it all happens through Hashem. But once Hashem created it, it's a natural phenomenon because the soul is in the brain. Even the animal soul is connected to the brain. And therefore, it would seem that it's a property that exists in the human anatomy, not connected to a supernatural phenomenon. That's what it seems like. But again, I'm not sure about this. To create an argument between the Alter Rebbe and the Eir HaChaim is not a simple thing to do. And I've never seen it. But it seems that way. That's what it seems to me.
Doesn't it say in Tanya that Hashem has to give extra help to the person if it wasn't the fact that Hashem stood by him?
That's a good question. That's a good point. It's a good point.
So
if you look in chapter 12, you're asking a good point. In chapter 13, the Alter Rebbe says something else. The reason the Beinoni is victorious is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Hashem helps the divine soul not to fall prey to the temptations of the animal soul. And he doesn't even mention Mayach Shalat Lalev, which is an old problem in Tanya, the contradiction between chapter 12 and chapter 13. In chapter 12, it's your mind, it's natural. In chapter 13, you need divine help. But if you look in chapter 12 itself, he says like this. He says, every person was created naturally, that through the power of will in his mind, he could control every craving. Yeah? And then he says, O bifrat al tzadak dusha. Particularly if he wants to. If he wants to remove himself from that craving to the side of holiness, he has a special help because of the unique power that Hashem gave to holiness over unholiness. It's like the power of light in the presence of darkness. But it's a befrat. It's an additional detail. The first thing he says in chapter 12 is that naturally the willpower of the brain could control and hold back every urge from expressing itself in behavior. It can't take it away from the heart, but it can create a stop sign. I was once at a Shabbaton in Wisconsin. And I one of the lectures, I spoke about the theme of chapter 12, that we all have ugly demons, and sometimes these demons express themselves, and they just seem uncontrollable. They seem, very intense is not even the word. I mean, you know those moments. It's like, this is what I want, and that's it. Nothing else exists. And you could come to the person and tell him all of the philosophies in the world and explain to him that there are negative consequences and think about what's going to happen and in 10 minutes you're going to regret it. But we really don't care. I mean, we all know in our lives sometimes there are cravings that overtake us and we fall prey to them. And 5 minutes later we regret them because they were shallow. But the next day we do them all over again and we regret it again. And we regret it again and the next day we do it all over again. Why? Because the heart really doesn't care for a why. It's irrelevant. This is a craving and I want to satisfy it and it's extremely enjoyable. So the Alter Rebbe says something new. He says it's not true. That is part of the delusion that the urge creates. And don't fall prey. It's part of the delusion of the urge. It's not true. Go to your mind and ask of it its opinion, and get from it a conviction, and if it produces a conviction and you want, this urge is not all-consuming and all-powerful. And whoever tries it knows that Alter Rebbe is right. You can try it, you'll see he's right. It's not easy. He doesn't say it's easy, but he's right. So I gave this over at the lecture in Wisconsin. And I'll never forget, a woman came over to me, and as I was speaking, I have to say, I was thinking about the contradiction between chapter 12 and chapter 13. But I thought the crowd in Wisconsin, it's not exactly relevant to share with them the contradiction between chapter 12 and 13 in the Tanya. We'll leave it for Borough Park. After the lecture, a woman came over to me and she says, I just want to share with you my experiences. What you said was very nice, but it has no relevance to my life. I said, why does it have no relevance to my life? She told me, I have been an addict, an alcoholic for 13 years. Real addict. And right now, and this has been for 13 years, and I destroyed my relationship and my family and my children. She said, I would drink every single night to intoxication. For the past 8 years, she has been sober. 8 years she's been sober. But she says, you think, she tells me, the impulse is still there, and if I don't go to groups, to therapy groups, 12-step programs, AA, Alcoholic Anonymous, every day, there is a danger that I will fall back. And the addiction is there. And the impulse is there. And the urge is there. And the only way I deal with it is every single morning, I surrender it to God. I tell Hashem, I can do it. My mind can do it. My mind can't control it. You, God, with your light, you have to help me overcome it. And she says, and if I don't do that, I won't overcome it. So she tells me like this, you spoke to people who are on a higher level. But people who are fallen so low, the mind will not do it. They need a higher light that transcends their own reality. That's what she told me. So I thought to myself, that's chapter 12 and that's chapter 13. He's talking to two people. And I saw in the Rebbe's footnotes, to Tanya, he says in chapter 12 he's talking to a higher level of a Beinoni. And in chapter 13 he's talking to a lower level of a Beinoni. But I have to go to Wisconsin to understand it. But then Hashem is not going to help. For that Hashem doesn't help. You're right, Nasus Lekehete, but that doesn't happen. The fourth time you sin, you don't suddenly experience a light. It's forbidden. You have to want to. He's talking about people that want. If you're not interested, then there's no mayach shalat on anything. They tell the anecdote.
I think what he meant, to say is that that's why you have to jump outside right. Your boundaries. It can't be you anymore.
Meaning you can't use the mind. I'm saying after the third time, you can't use
the mind. Oh, you mean even if you know it's wrong?
Yeah.
You're saying when you sin enough, nasus lekehetir, it becomes permissible, it becomes like part of your routine, which is similar to an addiction, yeah. It's like they tell the anecdote. They tell the anecdote of a Jew who walks into a bar, and he orders a cup of Shivas Regal, a big large glass. He says L'chaim. He downs it. He finishes drinking it. He takes the empty glass and he throws it on the bartender. The bartender moves, so he saves his face. but he breaks a whole shelf of bottles. The bartender looks at him and says, "Bismashuga, are you crazy? What is this?" So the man tells him, he says, "I apologize profusely. I'm so sorry, and I'm horribly embarrassed, but what should I do? I have this uncontrollable rage that takes me over, and when it comes into my heart, there's just nothing I can do about it. It takes me over, and it compels me to this mad behavior. I'm so embarrassed, please forgive me." The man says, "Okay, I understand, I forgive you." Comes back the next night, he orders a glass of blue label, he finishes the glass, and lo and behold, he lifts the cup and he throws it against the room, almost killing 10 people in its voyage. It lands, it breaks bottles. And the bartender says, looks at him again, astonished. He says, "Again, this Alba Shtick, the same Meister, the same madness." And the poor man starts crying and he says, "Again, I'm so embarrassed, I'm so humiliated, but what should I do? I just have this rage, it's uncontrollable, I apologize profusely, please forgive me." He says, "Listen, you need therapy. You need help. Once, new, but twice, you need help." He says, "Okay." He leaves. He doesn't come back for 8 months. 8 months later, he comes back one night. He comes in. He orders a cup of, let's say, Jack Daniels. He finishes the glass. And sure enough, he picks it up. He throws it on the bartender. This time, Hitaka almost kills him, almost breaks his nose. The poor guy is bleeding. He harms other people. He breaks everything around. The guy says, "Again, the same story." He says, "I'll tell you, I took your suggestion. I went to therapy. And now I'm not embarrassed anymore." Now,
The sad thing is the truth of it.
Yeah. Now the truth is that this is the modern age of therapy and psychology and psychoanalysis, particularly in America, California and New York, even more than other states, has a big blessing but also a curse. The blessing is exposure. In the words of the Pasuk 3,000 years ago, Leisisna Sachicha Bulvavecha. Don't hate your brother in your heart. Repression of resentment and envy and hate and negative energy is very unhealthy. And knowing what is going on in you is a blessing. Knowing, being honest about it, exposing it and dealing with it and confronting it. It's a big blessing. The curse is that sometimes we become comfortable with it. Therapists sometimes teach us, you hate your mother's guts. Good. You know why? Good. That's the way it's supposed to be. Chassidus takes it a step further. Says, know it. Alter Rebbe never denies that a Beit Din can get ugly. Know it. Experience it. But don't stop there. Okay, I went to therapy. Now I'm not embarrassed anymore because this is essential to my anatomy that I'm full of hate. It's not essential to your anatomy. Essential to your anatomy is that mayach shalto halev, that reason, conviction, morality, integrity has the power to allow a person to curtail his urges and not allow them to express and dominate his behavior. Not to deny them or not to acknowledge them, but doesn't mean that they have to overtake your behavior. That you have to stand in a bar and start throwing cups on everybody because 32 years ago, your mother looked at you the wrong way. Yeah.
I thought the whole idea of Maya Shalala came from the idea that the Maya, the natural kiss is in the Maya, and the natural eyes in the way. And since the natural kiss is part of the Maya Shalala, that it's connected to the
You're saying something nice and valid. You're saying anupshat. The Rechaim is saying, the Alter Rebbe is saying exactly what the Rechaim is saying. The divine soul is associated with the mind. The animal soul is associated with the heart. And the divine soul has the power, naturally, to control the heart. That's what you're saying. The divine soul, it's a divine power because of the fact that the Jew has the divine soul. So the Ohr HaChaim doesn't talk about a divine soul. So he calls it a Koyach Eloki. And the Alter Rebbe says that Koyach Eloki is in you. Perhaps that's 100% right. And then there's no contradiction between chapter 12 and chapter 13. The thing is, what is a little bit difficult with that is, that in chapter 13, in chapter 12, the Alter Rebbe attributes it to nature. HaMayach Sha'at L'Alev B'Tel Dasei V'Teva Yitzirasei. He actually quotes a Zohar. Raya Mehemna Parshas Pinchas, he quotes in chapter 12, the Zohar says that the mind controls the heart. The mind rides, rides and dominates the heart. And he says a person was created that way naturally, that every human being with the reason in his mind can contain and control the urges in his heart, not to actualize them in thought, speech, and thought, and to divert his attention from them, particularly to holiness. Because of the power of wisdom in the divine soul, which wants to control the body. That's what he says there. In chapter 13, he describes somewhat of a little process. He says, Hashem helps the Yetzer Tov. And what is the help? Hashem shines a light on the divine soul so that it should be able to control the negative inclination. He shines a light on the divine soul. That's what seems difficult to understand. On the other hand, in chapter 51, it seems like he's describing even a situation of the animal soul. You know what I mean?
The animal soul by its nature.
Because the animal soul is also connected to the brain in chapter 51.
Right.
And the animal soul's heart, the physical heart, is not controlled by the brain that is connected to the animal soul. It's also controlled by the brain. If the reason is in chapter 51, it's an issue of anatomy. That's true not only about the divine soul, it's also true about the animal soul. You're saying, what he's saying is that you could say Mayach Sha'at Lev by the Nefesh HaBahamas, but what's the Mayach of the Nefesh HaBahamas? The Mayach of the Nefesh HaBahamas is an instrument of the Lev. In other words, the Mayach of the Nefesh HaBahamas is not defined by pure idealism. The Mayach of the Nefesh HaBahamas is defined on egotistical compulsions. It's a mayach that serves as an instrument in the wave of the Nefesh HaBahamas. But ultimately, mayach Sha'at Lev, it's just that the mayach of the Nefesh HaBahamas is not the place where you're going to find refuge for morality. That's what you're saying. But mayach Sha'at Lev there also. The mechanism is the same. But the conviction of the animal soul is going to be one that will follow the impulse and not abstain from it. Versus... Yeah. HaBahamas. I see what you're saying. That's possible. That's what it seems to me. You're saying the Rechaim is talking only about relationships. Intimacy is so intense. Since intimacy is so intense, that's what the Rechaim is addressing. Unlike the Alter Rebbe, who is discussing the entire spectrum of human behavior. It's possible, I thought of that. However, the Alter Rebbe continuously refers to this particular urge.
He doesn't ignore it.
He singles it out. So that's why I was looking up there at Rechaim. Maybe other Rechaim is just talking about this. But it seems like the Alter Rebbe would feel that Mayach Sha'at L'Alev refers to these urges as well.
It depends when. The first coming out of Mitzrayim,
that's part. But the Rechaim doesn't speak about a certain era. And he doesn't talk about a certain era. He addresses a universal truth. The thing is, Yosef HaTzadik, in the presence of Potiphar's wife, was, as we know, overtaken by a powerful urge. And the Gemara in Saita says that what saved Yosef was the Muzdi Yoikner Shal Yaakov Aviv, the countenance of Yaakov's father. His own Mayach didn't help. His own convictions didn't help. But over there we know Yosef took it a step further. According to the Gemara in Saita, Yosef was at the verge of the relationship. But in any case, the Ben Yehoyada on the Gemara there in Saita says, what is going on here? I mean, that's Yosef a tzaddik. Especially if you learn in Tanya what a tzaddik is. The Ben Yehoyada has a whole interesting pshat that Yosef was totally not affected by Potiphar's wife. Her appeals totally did not talk to him. They did not appeal to him in the slightest. He says a chiddush that Yosef in his life wanted to experience the struggle of the Beinoni. He doesn't use the word Beinoni. He wanted to experience the struggle that the ordinary Jew has to go through. And therefore, he placed himself in a position to become susceptible and vulnerable to her plea. It was part of it. He wanted to experience that struggle. He allowed himself to experience the struggle to be able to transcend it. In any case. But that's a separate issue. But over there, it's also Dmuz de Yoikne, which is similar to chapter 13 of Tanya, not to chapter 12 of Tanya. No. You're saying if the animal soul becomes strong, you need Hashem's help. But a person whose animal soul is not so powerful, or in other words, he lives a healthy life spiritually, remains in control. That's what he says. He says it was a special gift that was given to the Jewish people. The term there that Chaim says is b'mine nushi. He says the problem of the Jewish people was as follows. If he says like this, if your eyes are shut off and your imagination is shut off, then you don't need a supernatural power. The problem is, this is what the pasuk is saying, you lived in Mitzrayim, so your eyes were not shut off and your imagination was not shut off because you lived in an environment and in a culture where you saw immorality flourish. So first of all, your eyes saw a lot, and your imagination has obviously experienced a lot of instinctive thoughts. Once that happens, the Erech Chaim says, it's very impossible to control the urge. And the Erech Chaim says, therefore, b'mine nushi zulus yisrael yashne b'taynazu. Everybody could justify himself. An ordinary human being besides the Jew can justify himself. He doesn't have the ability to control and curtail this intense, profound urge. You, the Jewish people, since I'm your God, so therefore your relationship to a divine supernatural power gives you the ability to curtail the surge, despite the intensity. So then I thought, maybe the Alter Rebbe is talking in Tanya Meir Shal Tlalev, if you didn't see, and you didn't imagine. But again, it doesn't seem from the Tanya that he's talking about it. I mean, if you look in chapter 27, he talks clearly about the Ben who experiences Taivas Niyuf, cravings to immoral relationships. So you're saying that Chaim is talking about with an overcharge of those exposure, then you need divine assistance. Yeah. But if you don't have an overcharge of those exposure, then he would also agree to the Alter Rebbe Meir Shal Tlalev, which I would like to believe is right, so that we don't have to create an argument. So, you're saying that Rechaim also means Betel Dasei. That's natural and inherent to the Jewish composition.
It's unnatural, you can say that.
Huh?
It's unnatural, you can say that too.
It's natural, like he said before, because the divine soul is inherent to the Jewish nature. So it's natural to the Jewish composition. But in any case, the conclusion according to both of them is that we each have the power to control our urges. And there's no excuses. Have a good night and a wonderful week. And I also surrendered to my urge tonight to talk about all of these things because I wanted to finish chapter 51. But we'll have to do that next week. Emir Tzahashan.
That doesn't say Zunut. I was thinking when you said it, what do you mean? There was no chilik them. They all, the reason it's so powerful because they also experienced Zunus itself. There was no chilik between a Mitzrim. But it specifically says Avodah Zarah. It doesn't say Zunus. So Mustama, they just thought, but they didn't experience that depraved level of Zunus.
I see. But what he's saying is they were overexposed. When you have such overexposure, you need, it's like chapter 13 of Tanya, you need Hashem's help. That's very possible.
Listen, you walk down, Square, you know, today's day and age, you get overexposed. You know, whereas if you live in a little shtetl, you don't have Tivus Niyot. You know,
that's a good point. But, you're saying it's similar to a person who would live in Times Square.
Yeah, live in the big city.
And he's forced to live there. He would need Hashem's help every day. Unlike a person living in a shtetl, who also has demons and experiences ugly cravings, but he doesn't need that supernatural assistance. So that's a nice point.
Ago,
that would be.
The Jew used to marry very young, so that the situation
right.
was taken care of.
Right.
We didn't mention the word sex, but that's what you implied.
Yeah. I feel when we learn Tanya, we have to adhere to a higher standard of vocabulary. Yeah. Although that word is so prevalent today in the American lecture circus, circuit, I meant.
Circus or
circus. Also
Freudian slip.
Freudian slip, yeah. But I think when we learn Tanya, we have to retain the refinement of the Alter Rebbe's wording.
You mentioned about psychiatrists. Marx, it was Groucho Marx who said, anybody who goes to a psychiatrist ought to have his head examined.
Is what?
And he said, Groucho Marx once said, anybody who goes to a psychiatrist ought to have his head examined.
I see.
To order additional MP3 CDs, call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076 or visit us at www.chassidus.com. That is chassidus.com.